Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never, and that debt is fraud. And it's all about full compliance with the Constitution. And today, it's all about the Declaration of Independence. And I know there's been a growth in people finally getting exposed to the original draft. And I think, you know, it's about time. It should have been done well before I was born, because the concept of the curriculum in our education system trying to label the framers as all a bunch of bigots and you know, slave mongers and so forth is absolutely inaccurate. Absolutely inaccurate. And as we've gone through these documents, it really does speak to that. I mean, the truth is in the original documents. And obviously, if we want to know what Thomas Jefferson really stated, even though it was subject to political correctness, we can still see what Thomas Jefferson chose to say and what was cut out. So that's what we're going to do today. But before we do, again, it is about constitutional compliance regarding our curriculum and regarding our politics. So I just want to remind you to please support Jerry Wistrand. He is still the one candidate. I'm waiting for others to kind of step up. I've just been way too busy to be soliciting and saying, hey, if you want to solicit my support. To be frank, I'm kind of really disappointed in the lack of support that Jerry's getting from the audience. I know there's plenty out there. And as a matter of fact, you know, I know that there are way too many John Birchers that, you know, just waiting to pounce on me. But come on. Support these guys that are champions of the Constitution. I hate to think that the majority of the people that listen to this show are people that are waiting for me to flub up. Now, I haven't seen anywhere in the newspaper, hey, GR's flubbed up, so I guess I've been covering my bases pretty good. But anyway, let me just also do one go back. In the previous show, and every once in a while, I may come across like I'm, you know, boasting, bragging. I always despised Rush. I do not try to flatter myself. I'm okay with being the first person to say something. But this is not about me trying to create an entrepreneurial environment, not for me to try to create an opportunity. I'm not somebody that's seeking to take advantages of opportunities. But I'm providing you my analysis, my deductions, and so forth from the years and years of going through these documents several times. And anybody that wants to challenge, you know, my assertions, by all means, they're out there, they're open. But I don't believe that I'm the only one that can add two and two together. It may be a new formula when we're looking at our government, when we're looking at these things, that people just haven't seen the formula yet. But ultimately, as anybody challenges and does this over time, there's no doubt in my mind that other people would come to understanding or coming up with the same formula. Therefore, I mean, I can say that, yeah, why is it that I was the one that found out that the courts utilize, and why they utilize the Federalist Papers, because the courts utilize those Federalist Papers that were never published, that were literally deliberately injected in to aggrandize their powers. It was a scheme that was concocted by Hamilton. Pure and simple. Pure and simple. It's about time we start challenging the courts, folks, because we know they don't have the authority by going through the ratification debates. We know why, probably. I don't even believe Madison saw those notes, or Madison even saw those Federalist Papers. I don't know. I'd have to wait till I see him in heaven. If I have the blessing and opportunity to do so, I'd ask him, did you see those things? And maybe that won't matter. Maybe those things won't matter in heaven, to where I would even think to say that. It's on my mind now. Because why did he not point those things out if he did see them? Which is one of the reasons why I know he probably chose not to go down that path and so forth. So anyway, all that being said, I've got to let that phone call go, and I can't reach it to silence it, so please forgive me. All that being said, I know I'm not the only one. So I'm not here the one, you know, to try to put myself on a pedestal, but I'm here as your servant to help you understand what the truths are and where we can go and what we need to do. That being said, let's go ahead and welcome Sean back so that we can actually dive into Thomas Jefferson's original Declaration of Independence. Welcome back, Sean.
Good to be here, sir. Thank you.
Now, you're going to read this, but you're going to read the yellow, and then when you're done with the stanza, I'm going to just highlight or read the words that were changed or deleted. In other words, everything you just said was deleted, to make it simple, so that everybody can kind of hear, wow, that was quite a bit. They got rid of all of that? And or why did they make these changes? Because we can go into the analysis, but that would probably take more than an hour. The fact is, it's important that you hear this language that Thomas Jefferson put into this, because his bowels were filled with, you know, anger and frustration and so forth. And so he wanted to send a message, and this was the message he chose to send. At that point in time, Continental Congress reeled him back in and said, hold on, not so fast, cowboy. We're not going to say this, and this for all of us to sign off on this. So they made changes. Keep in mind, I already said this yesterday, that the Articles of Association, everybody signed off on and everybody agreed that they were going to downplay and start basically getting rid of, at least that's what you would, you know, conclude when you read the Articles of Association, the petitions and so forth that they sent in 1774. It became kind of apparent now in the Declaration of Independence that the state legislatures of both South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and possibly maybe Virginia, slapped their hands and said, hey, hold on here. Don't be giving up our slavery. You know, we didn't like the fact that you did that. And so moving forward, they were kind of reserved on that. Let's go ahead and dive into the Declaration of Independence. And let me get all the way up to the top again, because I kind of perused this. So go ahead and set the stage. And then that means that you can read through all the way through that first big paragraph that has the changes to it. Go ahead.
Thomas Jefferson's original rough draft of the Declaration of Independence, 11 June through 4th July 1776, a declaration by the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with inherent and inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed would dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, begun at a distinguished period and pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such a government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to expunge their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of unremitting inquiries and usurpations, among which appears no solitary fact to contradict the uniform tenor of the rest, but all have in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world, for the truth of which we pledge a faith yet unsullied by falsehood.
Now, folks, on the Academic Source Documents page, thank you, Sean, you can get this copy with the yellow and green. The yellow is what was in, which means that the yellow was cut out. The green is what they inserted, what Congress ended up inserting. Now, in this one large paragraph, that all men are created equal, this big, meaty paragraph, they list rights, and I want to take this time to impress upon you, why do you not list all of the rights that are placed here? Everybody says, oh, well, what are the rights? Based on the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, hold on here. No, the right of instituting government is also here. Why are you not including, we have the right of life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and instituting government? As a matter of fact, it not only states that, right here it says, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government when it becomes destructive to its ends. And then later on in the same paragraph it says, but when a long train of abuses and usurpations begun at a distinguished period and pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right. It is their duty to throw off such government. You have a right to have self-determination over all of our governments here. If you are a citizen of this government, you have a right to change and actually take possession of your counties. You have that right. Why aren't you exercising it? Why aren't you exercising the right of establishing and organizing your counties as yours? And then you can look at your state and say, you know what, state? You're not doing it for us anymore. We're taking this over, and we're going to start implementing this beautiful thing that the U.S. Constitution gave us. As far as this multi-tiered Constitution, God gave us these inalienable rights. I don't want you to confuse this. We have these rights of self-determining our government. But the Constitution gave us the ability to create a multi-tiered government to where the residual mass of our government and our power is in our hands and control at the county or local level. So why would we want to have an all-powerful state government? Well, that bodes well if you want to make, you know, placate the democracy, or I should say population centers. That's exactly what they've been doing. You want to get all of your rights back. You have to frame and you have to contain government into the very limited defined roles. And so, folks, this isn't rocket science. It really isn't. We're working very hard to create you the template and everything you need to take control of your government. The petitions are already there. Why aren't you doing these things? So what was taken out? Inherent and was replaced by certain. In other words, by their creator, instead of inherent and, with certain. And then inalienable was changed out with unalienable. Then down below, it was begun at a distinguished period, and that was all removed. And expunged was removed. Instead of expunged, it was alter. And then unremittent, repeated. And then there were some other minor removals, among which appears no solitary fact to contradict the uniform tenor of the rest, but all have, instead of, that was all cut out, instead of it just said all having, so they're just trying to make it a little shorter. But for the truth of which we pledge a faith yet unsullied by falsehood was also removed. So some of these really strong words by Thomas Jefferson were diminished a little bit. For whatever purpose, whatever reason, you can deduce for yourself. When it comes to slavery, anything that was removed regarding slavery down as we go through this, you'll probably, you know, deduce, okay, that is protecting the interest of the southern states, because we already know in the Constitutional Convention and everything else, they demanded slavery, as we've just been going through the South Carolina debates and so forth. But anyway, let's go ahead and go through the next few paragraphs, and then when you hit this one that actually has a change, you can stop there, and then I'll just make this one word change. So there's very minor changes, you know, in the next probably page and a half or so. Minor pages in the page and a half or so. So go ahead, Strong. Go ahead.
He has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be attained, and when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly and continually for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. He has suffered the administration of justice totally to cease in some of these states, refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. Okay. He has made our judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount of payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices by a self-assumed power and sent hither swarms of new officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies and ships of war without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our constitutions and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation, for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example of and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these states, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here, withdrawing his governors, and declaring us out of his allegiance and protection.
Okay, so why don't we pause right there? Because that's a little page and a half about. And so from all the things that Sean has read, there were only a few changes. The word houses repeatedly and continually, or he has dissolved representative houses repeatedly and continually, just the words "and continually" out of that one stanza. Down a little bit further, he has suffered. Instead of the word suffered, they inserted obstructed. And then they removed the following, the administration of justice, and then they removed the following. Totally to cease in some of these states and inserted by. So the administration of justices by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. So these are just minor changes that they're making to this for the most part. He has erected a multitude of new offices by a self-assumed power. They removed a self-assumed power. Also down here, they talk about the charter and so forth, but I want to inject it here. A charter, folks, because what you have in your state, in counties, many states were created their counties, or they're playing with these sub-governments as charters. As near as I can tell, the people never empowered their state government to basically be able to form new governments and or to be able to create corporations, charters, those types of things. So when we look at a charter is done by a sovereign where we've kind of granted that. Just keep in mind, if your state government isn't doing it anymore because the types of charters and the type of things that they're doing, you have a right, an inalienable right, an unalienable right to alter that government, to basically take away that power, to say, you're not creating charters anymore. You're not going to control the sub-governments at all. Those are our governments. Folks, I go back to that very beginning stanza, that big stanza that says, when you list your rights, why is it that you are not enumerating, or you're not including in that list your right to institute government, your right to alter it, abolish it, or institute a new, that this is your duty when government behaves bad, when government becomes tyrannical, despotic, so forth and so on. He also basically removed and ships of war. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies and ships of war without the consent of our legislatures. So this gives you some insight that, shoot, the legislatures actually had some power for depriving us, in many cases, was inserting, for depriving us of the benefits of a trial by jury, in many cases. Not all the time, but anyway. Going on, the only other changes in the next, for abolishing the free states of English laws for neighboring the province, and basically what he did was he just changed out the states to colonies, because Thomas Jefferson basically was calling at that point in time the states, the what were colonies, the states. So they changed the word from states to colonies. And then the last paragraph, the stanza that Sean just read, he has abdicated government here. Then what was cut out, withdrawing his governors and declaring us out of his allegiance and protection, then inserted this. He had abdicated his government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. There you have it, up to the points of change at that. And we're now going to be going into a break. So when we come back from the break, we will take it up from he has plundered our seas, ravaged our coast, and all of that. So we'll dive into the last half of this document when we come back from the break. So folks, stay tuned, and we will be right back with Thomas Jefferson's original draft. Now, again, you can pull this in so you can start seeing these words and going, huh, that's kind of interesting. Okay, I get that. I don't get this part. We'll be right back with a lot that you won't get.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, at the expense of insulting you, like I probably just did, and that wasn't my intention, it's not that you don't get it, it's the fact that it's not included. In other words, there's going to be a lot of stuff that we're going to cover, not that you won't get why it was cut out. It's just the fact that you're not getting it from the education system. You're not getting this in the public arena for very specific reasons. It doesn't fit the narrative. If you're white, you're guilty of racism. If you're white, you're a hater of people. In other words, the white guilt and all this other crap that they've been basically burying us with, that's the narrative. They don't want you to see this language because it doesn't support their narrative. That's the whole point. That's why I said there's a lot you won't get. That's why. Anywho, so Sean, you ready to continue or you got any questions, go backs, or what have you?
No, let's roll.
All right, go ahead.
He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions of existence. He has incited treasonable insurrections of our fellow citizens with the allurements of forfeiture and confiscation of our property.
Okay, so right there. That whole line, he has incited treasonable insurrections of our fellow citizens. That whole line, that stanza was cut out. What was injected just before this was the withdrawing. Oh, no, we actually covered that. They inserted, beyond the cruelty and perfidy, they inserted scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally inserted that in between the perfidy and unworthy the head of civilized nations. And then they also inserted, he has inserted this excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants on our frontiers, merciless Indian savages and so forth. So that's what was inserted prior to this. Now, the next long paragraph that Sean is going to read was inserted by Thomas Jefferson. It was all removed in its entirety. So just read this next paragraph, Sean. Go ahead.
He has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This piratical warfare, the opprobrium of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian King of Great Britain. Determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold, he has prostituted his negative for suppressive every legislative attempt to prohibit or to restrain this execrable commerce, and that this assemblage of horrors might want no fact of distinguished dye, he is now exciting those very people to rise in arms among us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people on whom he has also obtruded them, thus paying off former crimes committed against the liberties of one people with the crimes he urges them to commit against the lives of another.
Okay, so the execrable, like execrable commerce, and let me look at the synonym for that, because I'm sure it'll pop up. It means terrible, awful, disgusting, repulsive. Right. So all of that was removed. Here he was highlighting the fact that the king took on the business of the slave trade. Now, when America started, who was running the slave trade? In the early 1600s.
East India?
No, it was Portugal and Spain.
Okay.
Because they were actually importing the slaves into South America.
South America, yeah.
Right, and into Central America and into Mexico. So Portugal and Spain, they were running the slave trade. When the king started bringing in, because if you remember, in 1592, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Well, that's when the Portugal and Spain started pouring in, and they were the, I'll just say, Spain was the empire of the world at that point in time. And when Britain beat the Spanish Armada in 1598, something like that, then Britain actually became the big kid on the block. 1602, I believe, is when Britain sent ships to Roanoke, and then later on to Jamestown. It might have been Roanoke a little before that in Jamestown, 1602. I don't know the dates. There's all of these things, unless I have it all in front of me. I'd never get it all right. But the point is, Roanoke was first, and that was the first settlement from the crown that was this new crown that just knocked off the big kid. They're just starting to, feel their power, smell their vinegar, vim, and so forth. And so at this point in time, people that were coming to the British colonies as Britain was establishing colonies. Why not? Spain and Portugal did. Why not Britain do this? Well, Britain didn't care about going down and challenging the southern colonies, because that would have just been an expensive war. They wanted to just take the land that really wasn't being occupied and or claimed by another European power. So they started basically from the northern side of, or the central side of North America, because at that point, Spain was already in Florida. So they had already kind of had the Caribbean and all of that. So as Britain started expanding its colonies and establishing charters and so forth, it was all done by indentured servitude under the charters. Everybody that came to America, black, white, red, yellow, whatever color, if you were in England and you wanted to come and earn, 100 acres of land, you would, come as an indentured servant, work on a plantation for 7 years, and be awarded a 100 lot parcel that would then be yours, that you could start, tilling and cleaning and basically making that land yours. It was free. You worked for it. You didn't pay for it. Your work was paying for it. And that's what brought people into America to cause the expanse. What was happening was Britain was looking at creating an entrepreneurial environment of establishing a very powerful commerce market, so that as they started growing agriculture, food, commodities, and so forth, they would basically become the controllers of the world economy. What happened with Spain and Portugal was completely different. They went through ravaged, raped, pillaged, stole. There's plenty of stories of ships that sunk with treasure. The interesting thing is, and I like to point this out, folks, Spain and Portugal were two of the richest nations because of all of the wealth they stole. And you look today, and they're the poorest nations. They're nations that can barely, they're so deep in debt, and they can't, all the riots because of Spain, right? We've seen Spain because it's so dirt poor that you couldn't even feed their people. What happened? That's what happens when you become, a riotous society where you're stealing from others for you to get by. So for the years and years that they were able to spend through all that gold, everybody loved it. And when that started running dry and they went to basic economic terms and so forth, it still didn't do the job. They ruined themselves because of stealing from others. Bottom line. Now, there's a lot of other extenuating circumstances, but I love to generalize it because it just proves that they used to be the richest and strongest nation. And because the Spanish Armada was the big dog on the block. Now, Britain, what they did was they established themselves economically. They didn't go and steal goods and so forth. So they actually started having to behave, and they, unlike the Spain and Portugal, started creating peace accords and so forth with Indians so that we could create a symbiotic relationship. And then down the road, as the colonists and these colonies started getting more powerful, they actually started playing the manipulation game of, like Thomas Jefferson just put in here, how they had been manipulating the Indians and causing wars around them and among them. So Britain became pretty maniacal. And as we talked the other day, I think we did talk about China, right? Where they're running the opium?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Britain became very evil, became very maniacal in doing all sorts of evil things in trying to, control people, subjugating them by drugs and so forth. Britain was unlike many of these other brute I'll call empires, where they were really brutal. Britain took a turn for real evil. And even though the British people thought, oh, this is the greatest thing, eventually, as the indentured servant migrated into slaves, when they started bringing slaves in, that when Britain declared that slaves would be black, that's when they took over the slave trade. They started actually a little before that, but then they basically said, you know what? We're importing black slaves. We're going to make it so that all blacks in America or in these colonies, even though there were black freemen already, all these new black people coming in, only slaves would be black. It didn't mean that freemen couldn't be black, but all slaves would be black. They wouldn't allow anybody to come in as an indentured servant or a slave. And indentured service went away, because they didn't see the need anymore to kind of bolster migration of people to come here. If you wanted to come here, then okay, we've already kind of got a good establishment of resources and so forth. You buy your land. You can come out here and invest in this great environment and this great prospect, this great opportunity. But coming out here for a free ride or indentured service for 7 years, that kind of went away. It didn't fully go away, but it kind of went away. So for the most part, we can see how everything kind of migrated or transitioned. Does that help?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So we can kind of move on at this point and go ahead and hit this in every stage of these oppressions and so forth. Go ahead.
Nor have we been wanting in our attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend a jurisdiction over these our states. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. no one of which could warrant so strange a pretension that these were effected at the expense of our own blood and treasure, unassisted by the wealth or the strength of Great Britain, that in constituting indeed our several forms of government, we had adopted one common king, thereby laying a foundation for a perpetual league and amity with them. But that submission to their parliament was no part of our constitution, nor ever an idea. If history may be credited, and we appeal to their native justice and magnanimity, as well as to the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which were likely to interrupt our connection and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and consanguinity. And when occasions have been given them by the regular course of their law of removing from their councils the disturbers of our harmony, they have, by their free election, reestablished them in power. At this very time, too, they are permitting their chief magistrate to send over not only soldiers of our common blood, but Scotch and foreign mercenaries to invade and destroy us. These facts have given the last stab to agonizing affection, and manly spirit bids us to renounce forever these unfeeling brethren. We must endeavor to forget our former love for them and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace friends. We might have been a free and a great people together, but a communication of grandeur and of freedom, it seems, is below their dignity. Be it so, since they will have it. The road to happiness and glory is open to us, too. We would tread it apart from them and acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our eternal separation.
Okay, so right there, let me jump up, because I think you missed the paragraph in between the last one. In every stages of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injuries. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. That word free was injected. And then the following was removed. Who mean to be free? Future ages will scarcely believe that the hardiness of one man adventured within the short compass of 12 years only to lay a foundation so broad and so undisguised for tyranny over a people fostered and fixed in principles and freedom, or principles of freedom. Now, what Sean basically read in that long paragraph, almost 3/4, if not a little more than that, was removed. There were only a few words that were put in, so I'm only going to read the words without reading the words that were deleted. This is what they actually said in this one paragraph. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over these, our states, us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here, and we have conjured by them to the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations would inevitably interrupt our connection and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voices of justice and our consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our eternal separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. That's what they actually put in. I mean, Sean, there were a lot more than that. And so the next part, which is the last paragraph, is kind of half taken out and then half in. So, Sean, go ahead and read that, and then I'll kind of read what was actually, what was kept, or what was injected as well.
We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these states, reject and renounce all allegiance and subjections to the kings of Great Britain and all others who may hereafter claim by, through, or under them. We utterly dissolve all political connection which may heretofore have subsisted between us and the people or Parliament of Great Britain. And finally, we do assert and declare these colonies to be free and independent states, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract allies, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do.
Okay. So this is what they actually put in, because, again, about four or five lines were just deleted out of that. And a little bit was inserted, about another four lines, five lines. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United States are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states. They are dissolved from allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract allies, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may do, may of right do. Now, there's kind of a lot there, but one of the things that kind of points out is they were injecting colonies instead of states. In other words, they kept on saying colony, 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 until they actually made the Declaration of Independence and that we are now independent states. Did you, you kind of saw that, right?
Yeah, I kind of got that earlier when we were talking about that.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay.
They wanted to save the best for last.
Yeah, they wanted to say, yeah, we're a colony, we're your colony, we're your colony. Now we're an independent state, because they wanted to make sure that they didn't put that, you know, too early. Anyway, okay, so for the very last line.
And for support of this declaration, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
What they injected into that, and I'm going to read it in because, you know, because it just says that it's a better way of saying it. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. So in other words, they injected this this call for the protection of divine providence. So there we go. That right there is the original draft, or Thomas Jefferson's original writing of the Declaration of Independence. And so, folks, you should be able to garner that there are maniacal people, if we don't really start looking at why things were changed. I mean, I get political correctness, but don't hide or obviate or try to make something that wasn't there. When our education system all of a sudden makes assertions that we actually have hardcore proof that are wrong or false, our framers, our founders weren't racists. Now, racism, as Thomas Sowell points out, was a byproduct out of slavery. But actually, when you look at many of the framers, even though Thomas Jefferson may have looked at blacks while he, you know, never really had deep, meaningful conversations as a young man. When he got older, he was introduced to a freeman black, I think in Pennsylvania, that was a poet and a mathematician later. And so he was just absolutely astounded, because his paradigm was that blacks weren't capable of having, you know, great thought or what have you. And then he realized how wrong he was. And that really changed a lot for him as he was being exposed to, you know, this world that he never knew. Now, I will say this. This is one of the reasons why in 1770, Thomas Jefferson uttered the words in a legal case, and I forget the name of the person. Look it up, folks. He was defending a mulatto for their freedom because in the Virginia law, the first 30-some years of your life, you were if you were born mulatto, in other words, half black, half white, your first half of your life, you were to work in slavery and be bonded as a slave. Once you reached your halfway point, and I think it was 30 years, 32, whatever that year was, you were to be freed so that you could live the rest of your life free because you were half white. You should be able to live your last half of your life free. And so the slave owner and the local government wasn't allowing in Virginia this slave to, you know, be emancipated because he was mulatto. Thomas Jefferson in 1770 defended him. And this is when those first words were uttered, or those words, "we were all created equal," was first uttered, period. Now, it was later uttered before the Declaration of Independence by George Mason, who I believe was either privy to or a part of the court or what have you at that point in time. But sadly, the mulatto that Thomas Jefferson was trying to defend did not get free. In other words, the jury of the peers or what have you said, nope, you're going to be a slave. Anyway, so with that, we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Anything, Sean?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that that's one of my favorite quotes of all time from our founding, is that last paragraph, that last line. And I think that's what we're missing today, the whole thing.
Yes.
Firm reliance on protection of divine providence. We mutually pledge each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And I think that says a lot about what liberty and self-governance is all about.
Well,
that's what it takes. That's what it takes, is for everyone who is afforded the declaration of these rights of individual liberty and self-governance, that comes along with it, or like we say around here, it comes with the meal.
Right
now,
mm-hmm. He wants us to be free. He knows that only a free society can have the opportunity to hear the truth, the truthfulness of his gospel, the truthfulness of him, and be able to choose and follow him and to be saved, to be baptized and so forth. In the ravages of Europe with the controls of the doctrines and so forth, the truth couldn't be heard. Only in America, where this free market of religion was, where people could actually be exposed to, you know, unabashed truth. If it didn't fit the narrative in the Catholic Church and even in the Lutheran Church. I mean, even Martin Luther, when he was doing the Reformation process, he was saying, I'm not creating the fullness of the gospel. I'm just trying to make the gospel closer to his word and closer to him. Interestingly enough, it was Sir Isaac Newton that basically said, hey, you know, we still do not have the fullness of the gospel, which is one of the reasons why that book that he stated that in was published 6 years after his death. These men in Europe kind of knew that the controls the government had at that point in time was stifling the truth. And so only here in America, where the truth could be heard, they were the beginning fighting of it. They were the stalwarts. They were the ambassadors. Folks, enjoy your 4th. Enjoy your independence. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic review. Please read my argument for Republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flow chart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.